Usually, when we think about how a building gets made, we picture, a very specific, almost ancient scene.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's boots in the mud. It's a group of people standing around a hole in the ground, looking at giant rolls of paper, just waiting for a concrete truck to back up.
Right, and it's loud, it's highly dependent on the weather, and it just feels incredibly permanent from the very first shovel of dirt.
Exactly. It's a process tied directly to the earth. For centuries, the rule has been really simple. You build on the site for the site.
But looking at what is actually happening in the world of real estate and construction right now, I mean, that muddy foundation pit is disappearing.
Yeah, we are looking at an industry going through a massive identity crisis. The spaces we live and work in are, they're moving away from traditional bricks and mortar.
We are hurtling toward buildings that act more like intelligent machines.
Which is wild to think about.
It really is. We're talking about structures built in factories with the precision of an automotive assembly line. We are entirely redefining what a building is, how it's manufactured, and, how it behaves once it's occupied.
Welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive. Our mission today is to shortcut you straight to the cutting edge of how the spaces around you are changing.
And we have a really solid stack of sources on the table to help us do this.
We do. We're pulling from a rigorous economic analysis published in the International Journal for Multidisciplinary Research, or the IJFMR, alongside some pretty revealing market predictions from Frost and Sullivan, and industry insights from McKinsey.
We're going to track this massive shift, starting from the tech-infused future of smart buildings, right down into the gritty, highly profitable, and surprisingly complicated economics of modular construction.
But to really grasp how we're going to build the cities of the future, we first have to understand why the old methods are breaking down under current pressures.
Right.
Before we even dissect how these future buildings are constructed, we need to understand what a building fundamentally is as we look toward 2026 and beyond.
Because pulling from that Frost and Sullivan research, homes and commercial buildings are no longer viewed as static physical assets.
Right. The physical structure is almost just a shell at this point.
Exactly. The real value is shifting to how that environment responds to occupant behavior.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit.
Sure. So we are talking about spaces that actively manage their own energy demand, utilizing embedded AI, IoT sensors, and predictive analytics.
And the forces pushing this transformation are intense. I mean, the construction industry is staring down severe labor constraints, massive pressures to meet new sustainability targets, and
And the reality of aging infrastructure.
yeah. To deal with all this, the industry is turning to some wild technology on the actual job sites. We're seeing real-time drones doing 3D modeling of topographies and, automated
Oh,
robotics.
the Frost and Sullivan piece even details humanoid systems and robotic bricklayers being deployed.
Robotic bricklayers. That sounds like sci-fi.
I know, right? But they use them to improve precision and keep projects moving when, well, when human labor just isn't available. The labor shortage is forcing innovation across the board.
So if developer can't find enough skilled workers to lay block or monitor a complex multi-acre site, they just bring in robotics.
Yeah, they bring in robotics to maintain the schedule, and they use drones to give stakeholders real-time progress tracking.
But the technological shift isn't just about the physical assembly, is it?
No, it's about how the building is monetized and managed for decades after the ribbon is cut.
Right. The Frost and Sullivan report describes this as a shift toward outcomes over assets.
Which is a huge pivot.
It is. When you look at the mechanics of that, it sounds like we are treating a 50-story high-rise less like a permanent stone monument and more like a giant smartphone that gets continuous software updates.
That is a perfect analogy. Think about a commercial HVAC system in a major office park. Historically, a property group bought an HVAC system, and that was the physical asset they owned and had to maintain.
Right, they had to hire the maintenance crew and deal with the breakdowns.
Exactly. Now, the model is flipping. Companies don't necessarily want to buy that massive piece of machinery and deal with the headaches. They want to buy a subscription to guaranteed efficiency and comfort.
So they pay for the outcome.
Yep. A continuous 72-degree room with high indoor air quality and low carbon emissions.
They are essentially outsourcing the hardware to guarantee the climate.
Which completely rewrites the business model for the manufacturers. Maintenance is shifting away from reactive fixes.
So nobody is waiting for a pipe to burst or a compressor to fail anymore.
Exactly. It's moving to proactive, digitized asset management. These advanced HVAC systems, constantly feed performance data back to integrated smart building platforms.
Oh, wow. So the providers can see a vibration anomaly and predict a failure weeks before it happens.
Spot on. This extends the equipment's life and gives the manufacturer a lucrative recurring revenue stream through subscription-based partnerships.
You're building a recurring revenue pipeline right into the walls of a structure. But this brings us to a massive logistical wall. If we are trying to build these giant intelligent smartphones to house a booming population.
And we are booming. The UN data in the IGF-MAR paper notes 68% of humanity will live in cities by 2050.
68%. That is wild.
Yeah.
So traditional hammers, nails, and weather delays simply won't cut it. The math doesn't work.
It really doesn't. The global real estate market is under immense strain. We have to deliver millions of new units annually just to keep pace with urbanization.
And the traditional worker-intensive climate-dependent methods are too slow and too expensive to meet those quotas. We need an industrial revolution in how the shell itself is built.
Exactly. So the industry is looking at the manufacturing sector for a lifeline. This is where we get into modular construction.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, the hard data from the IGF-MAR paper puts this into sharp perspective. When you take the construction process out of the mud and move it into a controlled factory environment, the average project cost drops by 27.9%.
Wait, 27%?
27.9, yeah. And the timeline shrinks by 38%.
Let's unpack those percentages because the real-world impact is staggering. The data shows traditional construction averages around $154 per square foot.
Right.
And modular methods drop that down to $120 per square foot.
On a sprawling, multi-million-dollar, high-density residential project, that delta frees up an enormous amount of capital.
And the timeline compression is just as critical. A traditional construction project that usually takes about 15 and a half months is dropping down to 10 months with modular methods.
That is half a year of collecting rent earlier and half a year less of paying interest on a massive construction loan.
That's huge for developers. But the stat that really caught my eye is the 62% reduction in material waste.
It's incredible, right?
How does moving indoors eliminate that much trash?
Well, it comes down to standardizing the cuts and protecting the inventory. In a traditional build, a framer cuts a 10-foot piece of lumber to 8 feet, and that 2-foot scrap usually gets tossed in a dumpster.
Right. You see those giant dumpsters on every site.
Exactly. But in a factory setting, that 2-foot scrap goes straight to the next workstation down the assembly line to frame a window header. Materials are optimized via software before a single cut is made.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Furthermore, you don't have pallets of drywall sitting out in the rain getting ruined, which is a common source of waste on muddy job sites.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here. When I hear the phrase factory-built housing, I think of, you know, a cheap, flimsy trailer or maybe a portable classroom. Are these high-density buildings actually good quality?
What's fascinating here is that the controlled environment actually makes the quality far superior.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Looking at the defect rates, the data shows the exact opposite of that flimsy trailer stereotype. The factory environment provides a level of precision that a traditional job site simply cannot match.
Because they aren't dealing with the elements.
Exactly. You have specialized tooling, laser-guided cutting, standardized assembly procedures, and strict climate control. The IGF-MAR paper notes that modular construction frequently achieves a defect-free rate of over 95%.
Wow. And traditional construction.
Struggling against the elements and human fatigue, it typically hovers around 85 to 90%.
It's kind of like hiring a chef to cook a complex meal in your driveway in the rain.
That is a great way to put it.
Versus modular construction, which is like having that meal perfectly prepped in a Michelin star kitchen and just plating it at your house.
Yes. And that plating process is where the speed comes from. That 38% drop in the timeline is driven by simultaneous workflows.
How does that work?
Well, in traditional construction, everything is sequential. You can't frame the walls until the foundation is poured and cured.
Right, obviously.
But in modular, while the site crew is digging the dirt and pouring the foundation, the factory crew is already fabricating the third floor.
Oh, I see.
So the moment the foundation is ready, the building arrives on trucks and is essentially clicked into place.
Okay, so if the food from the Michelin star kitchen is cheaper, faster, higher quality, and better for the environment, why are developers still cooking in the rain?
There's always a catch, isn't there?
There has to be a catch. The transition to this model must have some hidden hurdles.
The hurdles are massive, honestly, and they are mostly financial and logistical. Modular construction completely disrupts the traditional cash flow model that developers and banks have relied on for decades.
Wait, I'm trying to look at this from a developer's perspective. Usually I put down maybe 10 to 15% of the project cost, and then I pay as I go.
Right, progress billing.
Yeah. I pour the concrete, the bank checks it, they release funds, I frame the first floor, they release more funds.
Modular demands a completely different capital structure. The manufacturer has to procure raw materials and dedicate space on their production lines months before a single module arrives at your site.
And they can't just float that cost.
Exactly. They cannot float it. Consequently, factories require a massive 30 to 50% upfront deposit before production even begins.
So you're saying I have to pay for half the building before I even see a single brick?
Yep. That means you need significantly more peak equity just to get the project off the ground.
And I imagine traditional banks do not like this model at all.
They despise it.
Really?
Yeah, traditional banks underwrite risk based on collateral they can see and touch. If a standard construction project goes bankrupt halfway through, the bank sends an inspector out, forecloses, and repossesses the land and the half-built steel structure.
They have an asset they can sell.
Exactly. But with modular, 80% of the construction is happening hundreds of miles away.
Yeah.
The bank is being asked to finance a multi-million dollar building that is currently sitting in pieces in a warehouse in another state.
If the factory goes under, what does the bank actually own?
Exactly the problem. They lack the historical data and legal frameworks to easily assess that offsite risk. And because banks price risk into their loans, developers face a penalty.
Let me guess, higher interest rates.
You got it. The data shows this hesitation leads to interest rates that are 50 to 100 basis points higher for modular projects compared to traditional ones.
So the banks are tacking on a whole extra percentage point in interest just to cover their anxiety. On a $50 million development, that is a massive financial hit.
It is. Now, specialized lenders who understand how to collateralize offsite manufacturing are starting to step in, but capital is still a major friction point.
And I'm guessing once you solve the financing, you have to physically move the building.
Oh, the logistics outlined in the research are wild. Moving giant 3D modules from a factory to an urban center accounts for 15 to 25% of the total project costs.
Wait, 15 to 25% just for transport?
Yeah. You are putting a 40-foot by 15-foot box on a highway. You need dedicated trailers for oversized loads. You need highway patrol escorts.
That sounds incredibly expensive.
It is. And you have to meticulously survey routes to ensure bridges can handle the weight and underpasses have the clearance.
And once you actually reach the city limits, it gets worse, doesn't it?
Much worse.
You are somehow navigating a 40-foot module around a tiny city corner, navigating street width limits, trying to execute tight turning radiuses in congested intersections, avoiding low-hanging power lines.
And crane escorts. Don't forget the cranes.
Oh, right. The McKinsey Insights mention that sometimes developers actually have to change the architectural design of the building, making the individual rooms smaller, just so the modules can physically fit down the street to the job site.
Which starts to eat into the economic benefits real fast.
I can imagine.
And if the physical logistics don't stall the project, the regulatory environment absolutely will. Local building codes and zoning laws were written 50 years ago for site-built structures.
So adapting them to a modular framework causes incredible friction at the municipal level.
Precisely. The research shows this regulatory fragmentation can cause 2 to 6 months of delays.
Just for paperwork and inspections.
Yep. And it increases professional service costs by 10 to 20%. Think about it. A local inspector is used to walking a site to check the plumbing before the drywall goes up.
But if the wall arrives on a truck completely sealed, how do they inspect the pipes?
Exactly. You essentially have to develop entirely different compliance and inspection strategies for every single county or jurisdiction you build in.
Which creates a highly fragmented, inefficient landscape.
It does. But, and this is where the industry is placing its long-term bets, despite those upfront cash flow nightmares and logistical headaches, the math over a building's entire lifespan makes it worth the pain.
Right. Let's talk about that 50-year horizon. We've focused heavily on the upfront construction costs and the hurdles to getting the doors open.
Yeah, but when you apply a life cycle cost analysis, or LCCA, to these structures, the modular building pulls way ahead.
The data says over a 50-year lifespan, modular buildings are 12 to 15% cheaper to operate.
And the bulk of that operational savings comes from energy efficiency.
Because of those superior building envelopes we mentioned earlier, right?
Exactly. When you build a wall in a factory, you get tighter air seals, precise insulation installation that doesn't sag over time, and a massive reduction in thermal bridging.
The result is 15 to 25% better overall energy performance. To put a dollar amount on that, the IJFMR analysis notes something pretty incredible.
Oh, the utility savings.
Yeah, for a standard 100-unit high-density residential project, that superior factory envelope saves the operator between $50,000 and $100,000 every single year on utilities alone.
That long-term operational math is driving a massive global market boom.
Yeah.
We're looking at a global modular market projected to rocket from roughly $103 billion in 2024 to an estimated $225 billion by 2030.
Okay, but I want to push back on that 50-year horizon for a second. Most commercial developers I track don't hold a building for 50 years.
That's a fair point.
They build a complex, lease it up to stabilize the rent roll, and sell it to an institutional buyer within 5 to 7 years. Why would a developer care about a 50-year energy savings trajectory if they're exiting the project in year 5?
Because the institutional buyers, the pension funds, the real estate investment trusts who buy those stabilized assets, they absolutely care.
They run the 50-year models.
Exactly. Lower operating costs mean a higher net operating income, which means the building commands a higher valuation at sale. The developer bakes that future efficiency into their asking price today.
So the premium is captured at the sale. That makes sense.
It does.
So what does this all mean when we look at the global adoption of this modular boom? The map is heavily skewed.
Very skewed.
The data shows Europe is dominating this space, holding 46.2% of the market share. Asia Pacific is accelerating rapidly. They're the fastest growing region with an 8.7% annual growth rate.
But North America is lagging far behind at just 12.5%.
Right. Why is Europe eating our lunch on this? Is it purely a cultural willingness to embrace offsite manufacturing?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, culture plays a role, sure. But regulation is the true catalyst here.
Regulation?
Yeah. Europe implemented strict near-zero energy building mandates, commonly known as NZEB. These environmental regulations require the kind of hyper-efficient, airtight building envelopes that modular construction naturally provides.
So by forcing the industry to hit aggressive green targets, they essentially force the industry indoors.
Precisely. You cannot easily hit NZEB standards when your insulation is getting rained on and your workforce is dealing with freezing temperatures.
That makes total sense.
What happened was those strict European regulations created a guaranteed market. Manufacturers knew the demand for high-performance buildings was locked in by law,
which gave them the confidence to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building advanced factory infrastructure.
Exactly. They set a benchmark for the rest of the world. And what really stands out, and I'd ask you listening to reflect on this, what stands out to you about how long-term savings might change your own views on upfront costs?
That's a great question to think about. And when you combine that advanced factory setting with modern digital tools, the savings multiply even further, don't they?
Oh, immensely. The sources highlight the impact of building information modeling, or BIM.
Using BIM adds another 8 to 12% in cost savings and another 10 to 15% in time savings, right on top of the modular baseline.
Because BIM is essentially creating a flawless digital twin of the building before a single physical cut is made in the factory.
It allows architects, engineers, and factory floor managers to spot a design conflict in the software. Say, an HVAC duct intersecting with a load-bearing steel beam.
Right, and you solve the problem with a mouse click in the design phase rather than discovering it on the factory floor when the steel is already welded. It is the ultimate risk mitigation tool.
It takes the guesswork out of the entire equation. We are truly witnessing a structural shift in how humans create shelter.
We really are. We're at the convergence of two massive trends. The rise of intelligent, subscription-based building technologies that treat our physical environments like responsive digital platforms.
And the hyper-efficient, factory-built economics of modular construction that can actually deliver these complex structures at scale.
The industry is finally leaving the unpredictability of the mud behind and entering an era of absolute precision. We are standardizing the places we live and work.
It really makes you wonder, though, if our buildings are increasingly becoming intelligent hardware, structures built on standardized assembly lines, filled with embedded sensors, and designed to have their internal systems continuously upgraded and swapped out to guarantee specific performance outcomes.
Right.
What happens to the idea of a permanent city skyline? If the shell is just a modular chassis for a software subscription, do we lose that sense of historical permanence?
That's a deep thought.
Are we moving toward a world where architecture becomes as disposable and upgradable as last year's smartphone? Something to think about the next time you look out the window at the buildings around you.